When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. All right, let's do this. How did the loss to the Tennessee Titans affect how the experts view the Houston Texans? If you recall, last week they were largely hovering in that 12 to 13 range. It's been a rough patch here for the Texans. At their peak, at 5-1 and 6-2, it was hard to find a power ranking that didn't have the Texans in the top five.
It got uncomfortable for a little bit because there were still questions that needed to be answered about the Texans that we knew we could see early on. Where I felt like the national media weren't really putting their microscope on the Texans.
Yeah.
And recognizing some of the issues that they were having even as they were winning. So I was never comfortable when they were in the top five.
So you haven't really felt like this season at any point they've been a top five team in the league.
No.
I haven't either.
No.
I haven't either. I like seeing them there. It's fun seeing them get the accolades and whatnot, but close games, you know?
Sean, it was like all offseason long. It was kind of like when I would go on in other markets or on people's podcasts or anything, even the super smart film type dudes, they can only watch so much. When you're covering the entire league, you can only watch so much of any given team. And I was kind of amazed at how many really smart people were just kind of whistling past the graveyard on the fact that the Texans couldn't run the ball last year.
Right.
And that Bobby Slowick needed to demonstrate that he could actually engineer a good running game. And people were kind of just turning a blind eye to it. Mm-hmm. And obviously it's come back huge as an issue this year.
Oh, yeah, big time.
Including when Joe Mixon has run for over 100 yards. There hasn't been a game since the Colts game where I felt like, oh, yeah, they can really build on something with this. They're really clicking in the run game. So much of the big performances have been mostly about Joe Mixon.
It's crazy.
More so than anything else.
Can you imagine if Mixon were on the Ravens or the Eagles where Derrick Henry and Saquon are right now?
If
this version of Joe Mixon was on a team that could actually run block?
Well, likewise, what if Derrick Henry or Saquon Barkley were here with the Texans?
That's an even more interesting question.
They're not having this year. They're not. They're simply not.
Nope.
They'd have some great moments, but they wouldn't be having the years that they're having.
Absolutely not. All right, so let's power rank the power rankings. There's four power rankings that we use in this exercise each week in no particular order. CBSSports.com, ESPN.com, SI.com, and The Athletic. Starting at number four, fourth place in the power ranking of the power rankings, SI.com. They have the Texans 15th, down from 13 last week. And Connor Orr of SI.com says this: we learned a lot about how sneaky nasty this Titans defense was, but I think we're starting to see how uncomfortable teams can make C.J. Stroud. He had just one multi-pick game his rookie season. He now has two in the last 3 weeks and three on the season. Tennessee was throwing everything at the Texans and did a great job of varying pressure looks and keeping Stroud guessing. That last part is in the Tennessee throwing everything at the Texans is funny to me because in a weird way, the defense that we've heard about the Titans playing against the run game was just sort of like them waiting for the Texans to run into them.
Them just manhandling them. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I know it's all credit to the Titans. It's more so about their Jimmies and Joes than the X's and O's and the bludgeoning because there were a lot of guys getting physically beat up all over the place.
Yeah, I don't even think they're sneaky nasty. I think they're nasty, nasty.
Look, teams, I mean, we worried so much about defensive line movement and slanting and everything early in the season. There came a point round about the Jets games where teams realized, oh no, all we have to do is line up and beat the snot out of these guys. That's right. A lot faster. That's a lot more expedient.
Yes.
Just line up and whip these guys.
Efficient.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. All right, number three, power ranking of the power rankings. CBSSports.com has the Texans 13th, actually up one. That's why I put them, okay, I'll explain in a second. There's another outlet that has them 13th. How do you bump the Texans up after the loss to the Titans? They're up from 14 to 13 in Pete Prisco's rankings. He says this real quick, Seth. They seem to write things in the victory over the Cowboys on Monday night. Oh, okay, hang on a second. They haven't posted their new power rankings yet on CBS Sports. That's why. Okay, so this is last week's. Because they got
We have it now. So now, what did they have them ranked in last?
They had them 13th last week.
Now they are 13th.
Yeah.
Now part of that's because the Cardinals lost.
Okay.
They got bumped down from 13th, so they're down at 14th now, below the Texans. The Falcons had a bye week.
Okay.
The Bucks rose up a little bit, but not enough to surpass the Texans.
Okay. I mean, I'm glad you named these teams because earlier in the season, like the Texans, like, ooh, where do they stack up with the Bills and the Chiefs and the Lions and whatnot. Now you're like, okay, well, they got the Broncos on one side and the Seahawks on the other side.
And they got the Bengals and the Falcons both had bye weeks.
Okay.
So that might have changed to –
There were a lot of teams. You're right. There were a lot of teams on a – there were six teams on a bye this past week. So it might get a little weird. All right, let's keep
it. Dolphins are steadily ascending.
Yeah. Just in time for December 15th at NRG Stadium.
Yeah.
Would you take the Texans in that game right now? If they were what if that were the game on Sunday? Home game against the Dolphins.
No, right now.
Nope.
I don't trust that they're not going to allow some explosive plays.
Same.
The defense. I'd worry about. I mean, like the offense. Just go ahead and put it on a mimeograph and just tack it to the wall every week. I've got my concerns about the offense.
Yeah.
The Dolphins offense versus the Texans defense, I've got concerns about
the
big playability.
Yep. I mean, the Texans offense, I'm like, all right, well, they're going to score 20 or 21. You know, like that's where they'll be because they won't score in the second half of games, right?
Yeah. Ben, go put that into the mimeograph machine. I want to see your arm turning that drum, okay?
Yeah. The purple ink. And no sniffing the ink afterwards, Ben, all right?
Yeah, and then make an overhead projection for me, too.
Right, and can you get some microfiche for us as well, please? Can you get me the New York Times from November 23rd, 1982, microfiche style? Thank you, Ben.
Put it into the old LexisNexis.
That's it. All right.
They still use that, by the way. I got an angry text from a LexisNexis employee that didn't, after I made some joke about LexisNexis.
They didn't appreciate that.
They're like, hey, we're still actually really relevant.
We're here.
Like, I'm sorry. Sorry, nerd. Yeah.
That's funny. That's
not
very,
my world. You're
that,
not.
That tickles me. That's
I'm not trying to plagiarize a term paper from 1978, okay?
Let's see here. Okay, second in power ranking of the power rankings. Fourth was SI.com, had the Texans at 15th. CBSSports.com was third. They have them 13th. The Athletic as well has the Texans at 13th. They were 12th last week, down one big notch to 13. Here's what they have to say. They do best case scenario for each team.
Ooh, I need this.
Best case scenario. Well, what
do you mean this glisteningly awesome scenario?
Best case scenario for the year, for the season.
Scenario, I say scenario. What's up?
Playoffs. Making the playoffs is the best case scenario.
That's the best case?
According to The Athletic, it is. Yeah,
they can sputter their way to the playoffs.
Let me read the paragraph here and let them. I'll let The Athletic explain themselves, and then I'll let you tear into them. Here we go. There was a time this team seemed like a conference title contender, but that time feels further and further away. Titans quarterback Will Levis outplayed C.J. Stroud on Sunday, and Stroud is 32nd in passer rating, 70.3, and 30th in EPA per dropback. That's expected points added per dropback, minus 0.09, in the last month. So it's been, he's at the bottom of the league for the last month. For the season, Stroud has been sacked 39 times, more than any quarterback other than Caleb Williams. That's not a recipe for playoff success, even if they do make the playoffs.
And that's where I think the panic meter cannot be too high right now in terms of the way this offense has been performing. It just can't be. This has hit the panic button mode. You got the bye week coming up off after the Jaguars game. The Titans, I felt, provided some genuine tests of this team, this Texans team. That win or lose, favorite or not, I thought that you could really get a good gauge of whether they've made improvement. And from my bullet point list, Sean, and the keys to victory and everything, the Texans failed every single one of those tests.
They did.
And that doesn't even include the fact that Jalen Petrie might not be available for the rest of the season. So we'll see about that. So when it comes to fixing the offense, this is as bad as it could possibly be. They've been a horrendous offense over that stretch of time. And one of the only things that you could actually change that might make a difference is the offensive coordinator and the play caller, play caller right now.
Yep. Last one, power ranking of the power rankings. Number one, congratulations to DJ Bienemae and ESPN.com. They've got the Texans all the way up at 12th still, holding steady after last week's loss to the Titans. They remain at number 12. Here's what DJ says. The Texans are fifth in total defense in terms of yards per game, with the second most sacks and the second most interceptions. Kicker Kaimi Fairbairn also set an NFL record for most 50-yard field goals in a season on Sunday. The Texans' special teams and defense are playing well, but the issue is the team's offense. Houston has only one touchdown after halftime since week six. C.J. Stroud hasn't played as well as he did his rookie year. He currently sits at 14 touchdowns to 9 interceptions. So that's looks like the paragraph this week is just sort of a summary of where all three phases of the game are for the team.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go. 12th power ranking of the power rankings.
12th is pretty good.
Yeah. Top third.
What we were
almost
hoping for in the offseason. Top third. Was it 12th? Is it? Are they? All right. Do most Texans fans look at them right now as, hey, this is a... Because for a long time, we were saying, even after victories, all right, they're operating like a 500 football team.
That's right.
Now, after losing to a team that had two wins coming into the game, do you look at them as operating like a 500 football team?
I do.
Or are they a sub-500 team that can make a plucky effort here and there and beat a genuinely good team?
I think they're... I'm going like sheerly on the talent level at important positions on this team. I think I view them like a 500 football team feels about. Like, I don't view them as a below 500 football. I know they lost to the Titans, who are well below 500.
Yeah,
I view
the Texans are below 500 over the last 6 weeks.
They are. Yeah. They are. And they got to fix some things. There's no doubt about that. The broader question, you know, because Jimmy Ward said it, we play down to the level of our competition. How many games of playing like this does it go from we're playing down to them to, you know, you are them? Like, you're
well, that was like the Astros early last year where you're like, well, they're playing down to their competition. And then you get to a point where you realize, well, wait a minute. No, we are the competition that can be played down to.
Correct.
The way it's going right now, the
Correct.
Way it's been.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's a bigger question is, now, like, no, are you actually one of these teams that's being played down to? Yeah.
Now, the Astros, the difference is, the Astros, if you put it in NFL terms, they started off the first four games of the season really rough in NFL terms, right?
Yeah.
About the first four or five games, and then they figured it out, and they made a surge.
I see what you're saying. So, like, the equivalent of the percentage of the season.
Yeah, if you prorate it out to that.
Yeah, they were 12-24, so that's 36 games. So that's about, it's about a quarter of the season. It's about four games. Yeah, in a 17-game season.
So the Astros, it was like they started off 1-3.
Right.
And they were underperforming. It would have been a lot easier to handle the Astros if it had been a 17-game season.
Right.
Because it would have been like, well, all right, this is not going to last. They're going to figure this out or what have you. Yeah. But when you're watching it every damn day,
yeah,
it's really, really hard to keep that perspective.
It
would be a lot easier with a 1-3 Astros team in an NFL season.
Yes. Text page, 5-Hour Energy fan line. 5-Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football superfans. I'm getting well actually by some people when I refer to the Kennedy administration.
Uh-oh.
As the last time that, you know, since, for those who missed it, brought it up earlier in the show, a quarterback that has been sacked 8 times and thrown a pick 6 in a game, like Will Levis did on Sunday against the Texans. It's happened 36 times since 1960. The record for those quarterbacks in those games is 3-33. So the Texans have now made history with two other teams as losing a game where that happened. So I said, that's, you know, it's 36 times since the Kennedy administration. Text message. The 1960 season was the last year of the Eisenhower administration.
Oh, you idiot.
Kennedy
clown,
was
Sean.
Elected in November 1960 and took office in January 1961. So even longer, they say.
You know what? I'll tell you what, honestly, that's actually pretty good by you you got the election year right, but not the actual inauguration. I'll give you credit for that.
Thank you, Seth. I appreciate that.
So it was the first time since the Eisenhower administration.
Yep.
You're usually nails with dates and everything. I guess it doesn't extend beyond sports.
It doesn't, and certainly doesn't extend into the political
realm. Do you want me to do a quick quiz of like the timeline of U.S. presidents to see if you've got like at least a vague?
You know what's funny? I walked up to one year back in the late 90s, I went to WrestleMania. I was in my late 20s, mm-hmm. and I was hanging out. I stayed at the same hotel that all the wrestlers were staying at, and I saw a wrestler by the name of Bob Backlund in the lobby. Old wrestler, mm-hmm. used to be the champion of the WWF back in the day when I was a kid watching it, and I walked up to him, and I said, "Mr. Backlund, can I get your autograph?" And he said, "Can you recite the presidents in order?"
Oh, my God.
And I said... No. And he said, "Well, I only give my autograph to people who can recite the presidents in order." That was sort of his gimmick. And I went back to my hotel room and I memorized them, and I found Bob Backlund, and I recited it. He said, "Give me your address." And I gave him my address, and a week later there was a black 8x12 glossy of him holding up the belt in Madison Square Garden with him congratulating me on naming all the presidents in order.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
Did you do it chronologically?
Chronologically, yeah, starting with George Washington and going all the way to, at that time, it would have been Clinton, I guess, yeah.
I'm going to give you the toughest era in which to remember the presidents.
Taft!
I'm going to tell you. I'm going to ask you. No. The 20th century is too easy. Who was president before Zachary Taylor?
I don't know. John Harrison. I don't know.
That was James Polk. Actually, I think the hardest time would be Millard Fillmore, Franklin Pierce.
Dude.
Who was president after Franklin Pierce?
Millard Fillmore.
That was James Buchanan, you clown.
James Buchanan.
I can't believe you didn't know it was James Buchanan.
Dude, I was studying up in my room. I was like 28 years old in the workforce at the time. I wasn't even a kid. I'm like, no, I'm going to show this guy. I'm going to memorize
you.
It. Thanks,
good
man.
For you.
Yeah.
Did he say what his success rate was on that? Like what his hit rate is on that?
No, I didn't ask him. I was just happy that I got him right. I didn't ask him. But apparently that was his thing, because I asked some friends of mine. Years later, I brought up that story to friends of mine who worked in WWE, and they said, he does that to everybody. That's his gimmick. He does that to everybody.
It's a pretty good gimmick for getting out of doing autographs.
Yes.
Because it makes it seem like you're actually helping the kids out.
That's it,
you know,
man.
Instead of hating the children or the 28-year-old.
Or in the case of me, a 28-year-old adult.
Maybe, you know what? I bet he only does that for adults. I bet he does it for...
I don't know, man. Bob Backlund's a loon.
Like, as an NFL player, the big thing is... It's away games. Yeah. Away games is where the most at the hotel, the professional autograph seekers will be there.
Oh yeah.
And you're like, and this guy has got some guy's got 10 of my card. Like, who the hell has 10 of my card?
Right.
And it's not like it's a hardcore a president of the NFL fan club or Seth Payne fan club or something.
Favorite self-deprecation you've ever had. Who's got 10 of my card?
Yeah, like it's like other than people whose last name is Payne.
Right.
Not many.
No, that's true.
So you're like, and meanwhile, but then you got all these other little kids and everything that you wanna. But you're sitting there signing
50-year-old guy.
Seriously.
Yeah.
You're going to sell this on a website someday that will be named eBay for like $3 a pop. Like, no, I just let me go talk to this kid in a wheelchair.
All right.
You're soaking up time here from autographs I could be signing.
All right. Chris Long had some things to say, man, did he ever, about the Texans offense and anniversary of what I consider one of the greatest holiday films of all time yesterday. Do you agree? We'll have that for you coming up next.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Dana Carvey and David Spade here.
You might know our podcast, Fly on the Wall, featuring guests from across the entertainment industry.
We decided to do a spinoff called Superfly, and it's fun. It's just two of us riffing on current events, pop culture, catching up, impressions.
Joe, Trump's trying to be a dictator.
Yeah, just bump on the tater tots.
Joe, no.
Listen to and follow Superfly on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
It does feel like some of the issues with the Texans offensively were flying under the radar for a while because A, they were winning games, and B, they weren't on national TV very much. Other than the Bears game in week two, they were, you know, usual spot, you know, like the second or third slot on CBS. Then you get three straight primetime games, and then you lose to the Tennessee Titans at home, and now people are kind of sitting up and taking notice. And you look at the stats, too, and you go, wow, boy, C.J. Stroud, I thought he was supposed to be a top five quarterback in his second season here, and he's, you know, 24th in passer rating or whatever it is. Chris Long is one of those people that have taken – Chris Long's probably noticed longer than others because he's really good at what he does. Greenlight Podcast, Inside the NFL, on his podcast yesterday said – C.J. Stroud is getting damaged right now.
He looked like the next Joe Montana, and I still think he's got – you know, that rare ability in him. I'm not putting him with Joe Montana, but you know what I'm saying. They have done everything in their power this year to stunt the kid's development. I mean, his eyes are on the rush, you know, and like you could say, hey, keep your eyes downfield. But after 12 games of it, it's a survival tactic to know who's falling at your feet, to know who's not picking up a game.
Yeah.
Nico Collins has two touchdowns in a week called back on dumb penalties. Mm-hmm. You know, one of them yesterday is an illegal motion. Mixon and the receiver in motion at the same time, and like they knew it right away. Did you see it on CJ Stroud's face?
I'm always impressed by guys like Chris Long, and I think Ross is a lot like this too. It feels like they watched every single game that weekend down to the detail of like touchdowns getting called back. And
Chris Long is really well versed on a lot of teams in the NFL. Yeah, he knows like the little nuances of each game. It's very impressive.
What'd you think of that? What'd you think of what he had to say there?
Yeah, I think that's where, and this is where it gets dicey, and I never know just, you know, how listeners are going to take this or not. Some are going to take it different ways. I don't want to make excuses for CJ Stroud. I don't think CJ himself wants to make excuses for himself, but it's just a fact of life that, yeah, when circumstances around you aren't ideal, at first, those circumstances can kind of be separate from other circumstances, but there comes a point where everything feeds into the other things.
Yes.
And people start, it's like when you're in a toxic relationship with somebody. You start operating differently. You start doing things that you wouldn't. If you're operating, if you've got to work with somebody or you've got a, you know, your love interest or whomever else is somebody that's just wrong.
Yep.
You start operating in a way that isn't you.
You're not the
best
version.
You start lying about stuff that you wouldn't normally lie about because you know that this person's going to freak out about or whatever. And likewise, I think in football, when you just can't trust that things are going to operate well, you start making decisions that aren't your typical decisions. Yeah. And I feel like somewhere along the way, CJ started either consciously or unconsciously making decisions that he wouldn't normally make because of the circumstances around him. And it's not an excuse, but it's an explanation, and it's something that as a quarterback individually, he's going to have to work through in his career. But right now, in the clear and present moment, a lot of it, you got to question how much is Bobby Slowick really providing for CJ Stroud? How much are these other players underperforming because of the way Bobby Slowick is operating the offense?
And Chris Long plays right into that and says the Texans have to discuss changing play callers during the bye week.
So they haven't played Jacksonville, then they have a bye.
And I know he's tight with the quarterback coach, right? I know there's other guys that are in the building and call plays, right? Like, did we look at that? It was Bill Lazor.
Yeah.
Is there. He's called some plays in the NFL before. But they have to have a conversation about the play calling, because the play calling is not good. And I've seen teams work around worse offensive lines. There are some decent players, guys who have played good ball in the past on this offensive line. But they're not playing together. And they're not. And they're doing unsound shit. Mm-hmm. They're pulling Shaq Mason to pick up an edge guy who's screaming off the edge. He's tiptoeing. He doesn't know what he's doing. You know, you've given up a sack to Devondre Sweat. The guy hadn't had a sack since Jesus was a baby. And you're giving up a sack to that guy. He's 380 pounds. How do you give up a sack to a 400-pound guy late in a down?
That 400-pound guy choke slams you. That's how.
And I think that's the big point and the key that Chris made, that, you know, we've made a lot before. It's that there's plenty of good teams that are not chock full of all pro offensive linemen. You know, the old feeling is that, man, if you got five average offensive linemen who work really well together, you can go far with that offensive line.
Yep.
And there's lots of good offensive lines that have one glaring bad spot. So it's never an excuse that, oh, these guys aren't, you know, as good as they need to be. I do wonder ultimately whether Titus Howard and Laremy Tunsil are really wired to run this offense, because, man, you got to care just as much about the run blocking as you do the pass protection.
Yep.
You can talk about how great their PFF pass protection grades are all you want. If you're putting out PFF pass protection grades for those guys, but not also showing what the run blocking is, then you're intentionally misleading people, because it's an issue. So across the board, the offensive line is underperforming. But a lot of it too is, I told you yesterday, Sean, and it came up again. The biggest thing that frustrates me when I send my various clips out to offensive linemen and offensive line coaches to try to get a feel for things, so many guys that really know what they're talking about will say, well, Seth, on this play, I can't tell whether they're blocking inside zone or outside zone because the footwork is all over the place.
Yeah.
And what Chris was just talking about with having guards pulling to pick up edge rushers, that's not out of the realm of things that good teams do, except you got to have the personnel to do it. And they've got Shaq Mason doing all these things that you would much prefer a really athletic offensive guard to do. And Shaq Mason is not that guy anymore.
No.
And all of it boils back to, all right, Bobby's trying to figure out ways to mask how bad the interior offensive line is by taking one of the interior offensive linemen and putting him out on an edge rusher. He's out of answers. He's out of answers on how to make up for it. And even, yes, the pass protection has been better in a lot of regards, and it was better in some ways last week, but look at it and see how many times, oh, CJ's got time, but it's because they're using a 7-man protection.
Yes.
You know, it's like, all right, well, that makes life harder on CJ in a lot of ways. If the deep shot doesn't open downfield, good luck.
Yeah.
Good luck, CJ.
Yep. We mentioned Chris Long and him watching all these games, Ross Tucker as well. You know who Chris Long happens to be a big fan of? Ross Tucker. That's who.
I hope Ross Tucker hears this so he can get his flowers. But we see you, bro. We hear you. If you watch ball and you pay attention to ball, there's going to be at least 10 to 15 times in a game if Ross Tucker's doing the game as a color analyst where you're like, yeah, I remember that last week. It's just like when the guy from the Titans, 44 Brown, lays off a receiver in the end zone and he's like, yeah, last week that happened. He's gunshot because he got called for unnecessary roughness against the Vikings. Like,
said that right
he
away.
Just threads the needles. Like, before you can get the thought out, he knows it. And obviously played a long time, but we talk a lot about color analysts in this game. We talk about Tom Brady. We talk about Greg Olson. I put him up there with those guys. If Ross Tucker Tucker was a damn Hall of Fame quarterback, they'd be giving him $500 million to call games. He's that guy. I love Ross Tucker.
That is Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider. May your game day be delicious.
Ross was, you know, during when we had Ross on, I said that I disagreed with him somewhat on how much he was blaming Will Levis and almost absolving the Titans offensive line during the broadcast. That was my only issue. So I followed up with him afterwards. I was like, hey, man, just so you know, we have been gushing about your color commentary in that game. I thought you were really good.
Yeah.
And he refused to accept the compliment.
He did.
So I
holds
told him
a grudge. You know what he
is? We're going to play Chris Long performing a sex act on you later in the show, okay?
Don't worry.
So, yeah, I didn't use the same phrasing. But, yeah, Ross does that. Ross has a very good way of sounding like an actual human being and not getting too technical, but in explaining things well and also knowing, you can tell he's watched film on both teams, that I think people enjoy him as a color commentator.
He's really good, man. Like, the fact that he can, like, go do a MAC college game on a Tuesday and then he's doing sidelines on a Thursday for an NFL game, or he's in the booth on TV.
Yeah.
Just the going back and forth from radio to TV is not an easy thing to do.
I think the guys, who are the non-marquee players who you most admire as color commentators? Because I would put Charles Davis way up there. I like Charles. I like listening to Charles Davis. And Charles didn't play a long time in the NFL, I don't believe. But he's not a marquee player at all. He studies his butt off.
Yeah.
And he makes really intelligent commentary about it and everything. And I would much prefer Charles Davis to a lot of the more marquee big name guys out there. I think he does an excellent job.
Where's Adam Archuleta on the marquee spectrum?
I like him too. I like him. I think he's still getting his feet underneath him to the point where he's not as smooth as Charles Davis or anybody like that. But I feel with Archuleta's pointing out some of the stuff that sometimes you just simply can't see on the broadcast because they don't show the safety. They don't show the coverage downfield. So it's really hard if the color commentator isn't letting you know what's happening downfield. It's hard to know, and I think Archuleta and a lot of the defensive backs or defensive players do a better job of that than some of the former star players.
Yeah, I listened to the fourth quarter on our station last night of the Monday night game with Harlan and Kurt Warner, and I think that's a really good radio duo right there. I really enjoyed listening to them. I mean, Kurt Warner's a Hall of Famer, so he doesn't fit the non-marquee, but I really enjoyed their call of the fourth quarter last night.
My favorite part of Kurt Warner now as a media professional is him on X trying to admonish people to be more civil on X. And I'm like, oh, boy, this guy's fighting the good fight that he's never going to win. But God bless you for trying.
I love that. My other favorite thing with Kurt Warner, very open about his religion throughout his career. Like, he is a God-fearing man, that he's the face they put on the warnings of how to gamble responsibly ads, the PSAs. Like, isn't your ethos to not gamble at all? Like, they put the guy who's like hyper religious on, like, hey man, just make sure
you play the game the way the game is being played.
Stay within your means.
You play the game the way the game is being played, and he's in the media game right now. So like when big employer wants you to talk about the gambling stuff.
Irony comes with a price.
It's a conundrum. A lot of really genuinely faithful and religious guys also play a sport that you play on Sundays. You know, you're playing it on the Sabbath. There's certain you got to kind of reason your way into certain things.
I'm not judging the man. I'm just like, of all the people they selected to do that PSA, I found it interesting. You know, that's all.
I wonder if he's had conversations. I'm guessing he's had conversations about that.
Like, probably.
Hey, can we try to work this differently next year?
Yeah. All right.
I'm weird. I just, like, I'll do gambling. Look, Vice, I will advertise Vice.
Yeah.
You know, and I do on social media. I do stuff for BetUS. I do stuff for Underdog. And yet I don't feel comfortable. I've been offered doing Zin, and I don't feel comfortable with that, even though that's probably, there's way less documented issues with Zin than there are with gambling.
Yeah.
So I'm a fraud and a hypocrite in that regard.
All right. The Texans and Kroger hosting a Thanksgiving meal pickup for fans this holiday season. You can pick up a turkey and sides today, starting in about 20 minutes at 10 a.m. John Lopez, Reggie Atatula will be broadcasting live there. It's right outside the Texans, right next to the Texans radio pregame stage where Seth and I do Texans Countdown. Texans players and Figgy Fig will be distributing 1,000 meals at the Kroger Gate while supplies last. Up next, we'll get to that Thanksgiving film that is, to me, five stars. And the latest on Jalen, well, not the latest on Jalen Petrie, the impact of Jalen Petrie and the injury. We'll get to that and hand things off to the guys at the top of the hour. Stay there.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, we'll go out to the fellas. They are out at the stadium out at NRG getting ready to hand out turkeys and sides to 1,000 lucky folks out there thanks to Kroger and the Houston Texans. So we'll head out there in a little bit. Jalen Petrie hoping to get some more news on him here in the next couple days. They are determining whether or not he needs surgery on that pectoral muscle. So we'll see what happens with that. Texans off today. Speaking of Thanksgiving, I was thinking about this the other day. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is the greatest Thanksgiving film of all time. I view it as a Thanksgiving film because that's the holiday where it all culminates at the end.
I think that's very fair. You don't have the debate about whether Die Hard is a Christmas movie or not.
Yeah.
No, I think that it's very much a Thanksgiving movie. It's about trying to get home around Thanksgiving. Steve Martin wants to get home to watch his daughter's recital, but but beyond that, it's Thanksgiving.
And he travels the countryside with John Candy, who is a happy accident that the two wind up together. They don't get along very well, but then ultimately there's a very happy finish to the film. I don't want to spoil it. It's 1987, so it's, we're...
Turns out Steve Martin can see dead people because he's dead.
That's the
big spoiler, okay?
Okay.
He sees dead people.
All right. Yesterday was the anniversary of the release of the film. I guess it would be 37 years, 1987. So there was a lot of Steve Martin, John Candy, a lot of clips from the movie floating around the internet yesterday.
One of the more unexpected things that has been very pleasant for me over these last couple of years is how much Steve Martin is back. He's working. Murders in the Building is a very successful TV show.
Yep.
Him and Martin Short have gone on tour and everything. And he's like 78 years old.
Yeah, man.
He's like, that's where I've trained. When I was a kid, I used to have pictures of football players and bodybuilders up on the wall. Now I've got a picture of Steve Martin, doing a bit of physical comedy the age of 78. Like doing that little thing he does with his hips and stuff. That's my new poster boy for who I want to be.
Which version of Steve Martin do you like the most? Do you like the early in his career, like the stand-up comic, the jerk? The movie The Jerk, he wasn't a jerk, but the SNL appearance version of Steve Martin, or when in the 80s he became sort of like the quintessential dad, like Father of the Bride.
Or he was in rom-coms, weird rom-coms. Is this guy 30 or 73? I can't tell,
And then he got to be a little more serious, like in the 90s he was in some more serious movies.
Well, and he kind of just disappeared for a while.
And then he disappeared.
He didn't do much at all, at least mainstream. Maybe he was doing theater or something.
Yeah.
One thing I've noticed, it's like this with stand-up comedians. Usually stand-up comedy doesn't age real well, typically. It just the stuff that's funny right now isn't going to be funny 10 years from now. I think as things have gotten more and more serious and divisive in so many ways, I've found I've got an appetite for just the sheer goofiness of a young Steve Martin, where he's dressed up like King Tut, or all the where it was just nothing. There was no deeper message or anything. It was just absolute goofiness.
Yeah.
I find myself enjoying it a lot more.
Yeah.
I watched the King Tut video, the King Tut song, which is so stupid and not even really all that funny, except that it's so stupid. That's funnier to me now than it's ever been in my entire life, because I need an escape, damn it.
He was a big deal, man, comedy-wise. Like in the late 70s, Steve Martin was...
He stepped away from stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
This is where you respect Steve Martin. He stepped away from stand-up comedy when he was at his apex of fame, because he realized that there was no pressure on him to actually be funny anymore.
Yeah.
He would stand up in front of a crowd, and as soon as he said one of his catchphrases, people would give him a 5-minute ovation. He's like, well, I've lost my edge. There's nothing I can't. If I'm going to get positive feedback for everything I do, then I got to move on,
That's
I got to test myself in new ways. It's impressive discipline.
Not everybody's wired that way.
Caring about your craft.
Yes, very much so. So one of the things that was floating around was Steve Martin on John Candy yesterday.
Yeah, so at the end of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, there's a heartfelt moment where John Candy kind of divulges why he is the way he is.
Yeah.
But it turns out the original speech was a lot longer. This is Steve Martin. The clip is him doing an interview with somebody. I'm sorry, I don't know who it was. But holding open the script to that movie with the original speech and him talking about filming that scene with John Candy.
John Candy was very sensitive and very complex, and we really loved each other. I had a beautiful scene. Look, I'm not going to read this speech, but it's that long. We're at a train station, and he gets the entire explanation of his life. And I was opposite him. I was, like, weeping as he was performing it. And it was all cut. So I don't know why it was cut, except for tempo, and maybe you're at the end and you don't want to hear a long speech. It was cut down to a line or two.
I don't have a home. Murray's been dead for 8 years.
There was a line I loved. It says, I sort of attach myself to people from time to time, like with you, especially around the holidays. I can take it in March, July, October, but it gets hard. And then he said, this time I couldn't let go.
Wow. So that little thing in the train station there at the end of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles was supposed to be like several minutes?
Yeah. You look at it, it's a whole page, however that plays out. It's like a whole page.
Yeah.
The speech is a whole page of the script. So I don't know if that's a minute or two.
Is it
or
out there
it is.
Somewhere? Is it?
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't know, like, the entire uncut version of it. I feel bad for John Candy just because it sounds like it could have. I mean, that was a great moment in that movie,
but
it sounds like it could have been an all time, like, wow. This guy's way deeper than we thought he was and had way more range than we thought he did. But you can see Steve Martin's getting pretty emotionally worked up as he's reading it.
Just
you
talking
can tell
about
he's,
it.
He's being overcome with emotion.
Yeah, that's...
That movie, so I saw a bunch of the clips yesterday. The biggest thing about that movie that I kept thinking over and over again was, I don't know, you'd have to stop every 5 minutes and explain to a Gen Z person about why he needed the paper receipt for the rental car, why he couldn't tell his wife where he was at any given moment, like all these different things that just used to happen in the days before cell phones.
Oh, yeah.
And computers and internet and everything else.
Yeah, that was, oh, my God. Yeah, the rental car scene with the lady the behind
nice little,
the counter.
The nice little lady that says at the end, you're
bleeped. Yeah. Yeah.
Because he doesn't have a paper receipt
of
the rental car. How would she know that he is the guy that deserves a car? Yeah.
Oh, my God. And the bed, the vibrating bed.
Some of it really holds. Yeah, it's the same stuff you still have to deal with. If you're stuck with John Candy, who's
smoking in the hotel. Remember, I mean, John Candy's just burning through cigarettes in the hotel. He was burning through cigarettes in the car because he threw one in the back. He thought he threw one out the window, and it wound up in the back seat, and the car ended up in a smoldering mess.
The fact that he was a shower ring salesman as opposed to like, yeah, I can get these on Alibaba for whatever. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, and then they had to raise cash. So he sold the shower curtain rings, but he sold them to women in the airport as if they were earrings.
Well, yeah, you know what? That's a whole nother thing is the fact that it was such a big deal that he lost his wallet.
Yeah.
And, you know, like losing your wallet, like, yeah, what? Use your Apple Pay, what?
Right. Yeah. Now the biggest deal losing your wallet is the inconvenience of canceling your credit cards. Like,
yeah. If you lose your wallet, you can figure out a way to get cash usually.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, you know what? Honestly, everything in that movie. Actually, you could explain if he just lost his cell phone. If he lost his smartphone, then okay, then a lot of that same stuff still works.
I don't know why they didn't try to rent a car from the get-go. You know, like they were in like Kansas.
I think they were still hoping.
It started in New York,
and there were winter storms though too, so it wasn't as simple as hey, you're going to be able to drive. You're going to be able to drive if you use it.
I just remember watching that movie and being like, just drive in the snow. I drove in the snow all the time from South Bend to Connecticut.
You know what I feel like? And there's the rail car scene in there. I feel like when we were growing up, there was a lot more romance about riding the rails. I think because a lot of the people that were making the movies had grown up with parents who were in the Depression, or they themselves had lived through the Great Depression, and that like being a hobo and everything else, like Jack Kerouac was still an influence on a lot of these people. That the romance of riding the rails, I don't think these kids these days have like a fantasy of leaving, like I did growing up.
Yeah,
like that I was just gonna go ride the rails. You know, screw this. I'm going to drop out in ninth grade and go ride the rails. Do kids still have that dream?
I don't think so. I'll check
with my
kids.
I don't think they do. I think they dream of being a YouTuber.
I think so.
Which is a much more ambitious. People will scoff at that, but it's a much more ambitious goal than riding the rails.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm just thinking, oh, dude, I got to watch that movie tonight. I haven't seen Planes, Trains, and Automobiles in a couple of years. When they're singing songs on the bus and Steve Martin's three coins in a fountain and everybody's staring at him. And John Candy just goes, Flintstones, meet the Flintstones. That's such a good movie, man. Hey, let's head out to NRG Stadium. The pregame stage right there is where people can head out to NRG Stadium today and courtesy of Kroger and the Houston Texans, pick up a Thanksgiving meal for the family out there. John Lopez and Reggie Atatula are out there. Gentlemen, how are we feeling? How are things going? Set the scene for us. What's going on?
Oh, man, there are people in a very nice, like, long line, that's what I was trying to say, around John Lopez's favorite building, the Astrodome, getting ready.
It's right there, man.
For the turkey time with the Texans, which is presented by Kroger to get going here.
Yeah. I can smell the feasties from here.
Yeah. Well, come on.
The wind
there are people
from
that
there.
Are picking up turkeys.
What is all that all about? Smell the feces from here.
It's blowing right straight from that direction. I'm not exaggerating. Y'all are going
to
make – Reggie and I cannot express how much we love that segment.
The one right now
about planes, trains, and automobiles.
Yeah. I am absolutely going to watch it again tonight.
Yes,
it was amazing.
Yeah.
It was an amazing breakdown of the only Thanksgiving movie out there.
I think it's. Yeah, I think it is. That was my. You know, sorry, Reggie. I think it is leading it. Yeah, like because in my mind this week I'm like, okay, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is the best Thanksgiving movie. What else is in contention? It's the only one. You're absolutely right.
Yeah,
and that, I think that goes to one of my points, which is this might be why Thanksgiving is constantly encroached upon by Christmas, is that, you know, we have not given Thanksgiving its due with the adequate media, whether it's music or movies or such, and that's why you got Mariah Carey already going, you know?
That's a hot take right there. I like that.
The other notable Thanksgiving movie that a lot of people have seen that is will spark different conversations with your young people is a Charlie Brown Thanksgiving.
But nobody watches it.
Well, but there's also there's notable, like, you have to explain why Franklin is sitting by himself on one side of the table. And everything.
Wait, is there an explanation there?
Yeah. Like, okay, so Charles Schulz, when he was doing Charlie Brown back in the day, it was during segregation. There was still segregation,
right,
you know, when he started off doing it. And when he started incorporating Franklin into certain parts of the comic strip, he lost a lot of newspapers in the South stopped running it. So
yeah,
it was kind of like a years-long kind of battle and negotiation with Charles Schulz to get Franklin incorporated into the Charlie Brown comic strip. And it was like Charles Schulz. When you don't dig into it, Charles Schulz will get a lot of flack for it. And you could argue about he should have done it earlier, whatever. Like it was complicated. It was really complicated. But when you see that image, Franklin sitting all by himself at one side of the Thanksgiving table, that was all part of a big negotiation about getting Franklin into the actual cartoon. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
Somehow that was a progressive act, and I believe, if my computer is showing me correctly, is it Charles Schulz's birthday today?
Is it? I don't know.
Is it?
How old would he be?
Oh well, let me double dip down. Yeah.
While he's doing that, we had all kinds of hot takes on your segment. We love that segment
so much.
Because I think it was Seth that was saying, you know, the timeliness of comedians, and I was telling Reggie as we're listening, Rodney Dangerfield will never not be funny because he didn't do anything timely. It was about wives, and it was about
him?
Respect, and it was about how ugly he is,
and.
Like, you can watch that today and laugh your ass off.
Yeah.
102 would be.
He'd be 102. Okay, yeah.
That is right.
Okay, there you go. All right. Well, the more you know. All right, fellas. Well, we will hand things off to you. Now, I read in our promo copy for this, Figgy and the Texans players are handing out these meals, right?
You're darn
right. That's right. Okay. It is the Texans players. It is Toro. It is Texans cheer. And, of course, our very own Figgy Fig is out handing out turkeys.
The biggest stars in town. There you go.
You're darn
That's
right.
It.
That's it. All right, there you go. Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies and an integrated Thanksgiving to you,
Thank
Sean.
Thank you very much.
Fine. This is the year you do it. This is the year. I know you can do it, Sean.
I hate you.
Put away the... the hate, Sean.
You're the worst. All right. You're listening to KILT.
Some people have a white Christmas. Sean has a white Thanksgiving.
KILT HD2, an Odyssey station.